Conversations That Matter is a partner program for the Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the support of the following and viewers like you.
Michael Chong, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. You know, it's interesting having you here. I know that you're in the midst of a political campaign to try and become the leader of the Conservative Party, and we'll kind of get to that. But what fascinates me about you and our own relationship with ourselves as Canadians is, what does it mean to be a Canadian now? You know, we look at your family heritage. Your father was Chinese, your mother Dutch. You speak the Netherlands, by the
way? I can't speak the Netherlands, praten.
And you kind of grew up in a rural environment. You live in an urban. What does it mean to be Canadian now? And then let's talk about the context of that in relationship to the Conservative Party.
Well, I think it means to be part of one of the most exciting countries on the face of the earth, a place where we've created something very special, a place where millions of people have come in recent decades and in the decades and centuries before to create a different kind of society where it doesn't matter where you come from, what your background, your race, religion, or creed is, but rather what you aspire to be, and a place where we all share a common Canadian citizenship centered around our Charter of Rights and Freedoms, our laws, our democracy, our freedoms. So we've built something here pretty special that we need to protect but also enhance.
Well, I think that that view is true if you have an inclusive perspective, but not everybody does. And there are even people who are running for the leadership of your party who don't see what it means to be Canadian in that light. So how do we move towards that and also recognize that, you know, as an inclusive society, it also brings with it some challenges?
Absolutely. Look, you know, as a political leader, there's two ways to debate immigration. There's two ways to talk about immigration. One is to play to people's dark fears about immigrants, which is not constructive. The other is to say, look, we have to be constructive about our immigration policy. It's too important a public policy file to play politics with. I think it's perfectly acceptable to have a debate about how to strengthen our immigration system. But what we have to be careful about as political leaders is that we don't play to people's dark fears about immigration, that we don't play to anti-immigrant prejudice.
But if we look at the Canadian history, there has been that fear for a long period of time. Chinese, your father is of Chinese descent. Up until 1964, the challenges of being Chinese and coming to Canada, living here and having rights and freedoms, they were limited. Mm-hmm. And yet since then, we've opened our arms to the people of the world and said, now come and join us in the building of a truly blessed nation. But there are people who are going, oh yeah, but we've made lots of mistakes and it really hasn't been worth it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, the first generation always struggles to integrate into Canadian society, but the second generation integrates, and I'm proof of that. You know, I'm the first generation of my family born and raised in Canada, and I've completely integrated into Canadian society. So I think we have to be patient about the millions of newcomers who've come here. You know, often it takes time for their families to integrate into Canadian society, but I'm confident that they will integrate, just like my family integrated. You know, when my father came here in 1952 from Hong Kong as a Chinese immigrant, you know, there was a lot of fear about Chinese immigration at the time. In fact, it was only 4 years after the Chinese Exclusion Act had been repealed.
Yep.
And even though the act had been repealed, there were still a lot of barriers to people like my father integrating into Canadian society.
Where he could own property and everything.
Yeah, everything. Difficult to get housing, difficult to get a job. But my father persevered, and the next generation, you know, is completely integrated into Canadian society. In fact, you know, I tell a funny story about my family. My father, being born and raised in Hong Kong, his first language was Chinese, was Cantonese. Mm-hmm. I'm the second generation of Chongs to be Canadian. I was born here. My first language and that of my sister and two brothers is English. My youngest brother, who's a British Columbian who lives in Cranbrook, he married a Francophone. And so they have two children. I've got a niece and a nephew. They're raised as Francophones. So the third generation of the Chong family is Francophone. That's the Canadian
story. In that
story.
Branch of the family.
That's right. So that's the story of Canadian immigration. Immigrants integrate. It just takes some time.
So when we take a look at the crisis that unfolded in Syria, and we had, I think it was 6.5 million people that were displaced either internally in Syria or were leaving the country, did we do a good job of stepping up to the plate and reaching out as the United Nations High Commission on Refugees had suggested we have a responsibility to do?
I think Canada has been very generous in accepting Syrian refugees. I think there have been challenges in the last year in integrating those refugees because of the high volumes. And so I think whatever policy we have in place, it has to be with the view to ensuring that that we have sufficient resources in place to handle the intake of refugees. Because if we don't, not only do we undermine public support for our refugee policy, which is among the most generous in the world, but we also don't do any service to the refugees themselves. Mm-hmm. Nothing could be worse for a refugee family coming here to suddenly have a lack of resources, a lack of supports in place to help them integrate. That sets them up for failure, and I don't think that does them any service.
I just got to get you to hang on for a second while we take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back.
Conversations That Matter is a not-for-profit program made possible thanks to the charitable support of the following and from viewers like you. Please visit conversationsthatmatter.tv and help us to continue to produce this program.
Well, there is a tendency for those of us who live here now to look at people who have come here and say, well, it's your job to integrate into Canadian society. But how are they supposed to know? And in a situation where we're bringing in refugees, what responsibility do we have to them to understand what those challenges are going to be and what are the living conditions that they're going to require?
Yeah, I think on the immigration side of the equation, immigrants have a responsibility to integrate into Canadian society. But I think with the refugee stream of people coming here, it's a little different. They're coming from war-torn countries, often from situations where they've been shell-shocked, subject to horrific events that few of us can imagine. And so I think they need special support coming in, and that's what the government currently provides. So I think we have to look at immigration differently than refugees. Where we're admitting people on the basis of compassionate and humanitarian grounds.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to immigration, what's your perspective on how open we need to be? Because mm-hmm. it's my understanding that if we're not bringing people into Canada, mm-hmm. we're not going to grow.
Yeah, so with immigration, I think our singular focus should be on Canada's economic interests. We have labor shortages in certain parts of the economy. At the same time, we have high unemployment at 7% nationally. We also have an aging workforce that needs to be replenished. So I think the policies that we put in place should be geared towards our economic interest. And the numbers of immigrants we admit every year should be based on that singular economic focus. And I think that not only helps Canadians here at large in terms of accomplishing our economic goals, it also helps immigrants. The best way for an immigrant to integrate into Canadian society is to enter the workforce quickly and to have a productive job where they can contribute to not only our society, but to their furtherment of their families.
But we have a considerable number of barriers that are in place. You can see highly educated and trained people from other countries say, okay, I take you up on that invitation, mm-hmm. Canada. They come here, and then finding work in their respective careers can become the kind of challenge that makes them go back home because they come mm-hmm. up against regulatory organizations or associations or whatever it is that stands in the way. And then they say, the allure of the Canadian experience isn't quite what I thought it was. Mm-hmm. So how do we address that? Because if we need to bring those people in, we need them to fill roles, and yet we stand in the way of the process once they're here.
Yeah, so this is a complex policy issue because most of the professions are regulated by provinces and by provincial self-governing bodies like engineering, medicine, right. nursing, the law, a whole range of professions. So I think what the federal government can do is provide information to would-be immigrants to Canada to make it clear what their credentials are worth if they are to come here and the path that they need to pursue in order to become recognized in Canada for their education and their credentials. If we do that, I think we'll avoid that problem of immigrants coming here and being being surprised or being disappointed about their entry and their lack of recognition for their credentials.
So when we're looking at immigrants, are we looking at the worker class, those people who are going to come and take those jobs that most Canadians don't want to do? Or is it a mix of also bringing in entrepreneurs who are saying, I'm going to come here and create business and actually hire people as well?
I think it's both. I think we have labor shortages in both parts of our economy. There are many high-paying jobs that are going unfilled in, you know, for example, the high-tech sector in Vancouver here and in Waterloo. And in that case, I think we need to speed up a program called Express Entry. I've heard from many employers in this country that it's difficult to get approvals to get people into the country to fill these positions which are currently being unfilled. So the government needs to speed up that process to allow employers who have jobs that are unfilled to fill those jobs with productive immigrants. On the other hand, there are many minimum wage jobs in this country that are going unfilled because of labor shortages, and we also need to ensure that those jobs are being filled.
And yet there are people who say, yeah, but when you start to bring in people on those numbers, the nature of being a Canadian changes. I'm not convinced that that's true. I'm going to give you my own bias on
sure.
this. I actually think that Canada changes people far more than they change Canada, that
Great.
We do have a good cultural foundation.
I agree with you entirely.
Yeah, yeah.
My family, I couldn't agree with you more. My family is a good example of that. You know, I can't, and my brothers and sister can't speak Chinese. My father was the first generation. He was Chinese speaking as his first language. The second generation is English speaking as their first language. And, you know, one branch of the Chong family is French speaking as their first language. So Canadian culture, Canadian society is strong enough to absorb the waves of immigration that we have been receiving and ensure that those immigrants integrate into Canadian society. Look, you just have to look around you at the vibrancy of cities like Vancouver, Toronto, Montreal, that have benefited so greatly from these waves of immigration, not just culturally, but economically and otherwise.
This is our second break. We'll be back in a moment.
Conversations That Matter is a not-for-profit program made possible thanks to the charitable support of the following and from viewers like you. Please visit conversationsthatmatter.tv and help us to continue to produce this program.
I can hear people here in Vancouver in particular saying, well, hang on just a second there, Mr. Chong. You know, we've had a wave of people come from Asia and in particular China with lots of money, and they have had a significant impact on the housing market. And as a result, there's been quite a backlash. All of a sudden, there's this knee-jerk reaction from the provincial government that says, we're going to clamp down on that. How, from a federal perspective, do you get involved in that process and making sure that the right mix of people is coming to the country at the right time?
Well, Stuart, when you look at the data, the evidence is that foreign buyers are not driving skyrocketing housing prices. They may be a factor in skyrocketing housing prices in certain parts of the country like Vancouver, but it's not the main factor. And here's the proof. Mm. We've had skyrocketing housing prices in places like in places like Regina and Saskatoon, which receive virtually no immigration. This is a countrywide problem that's a result of what I believe to be a singular policy on part of the federal government, which is CMHC's mortgage insurance program. The federal government has provided mortgage insurance, which has allowed banks to privatize their profits and pass the risk on to Canadian taxpayers. And what this has done is it's led to unsustainable rates of mortgage credit growth over the last 10 years. And that is the biggest single factor in driving household unaffordability. So my view is that the government's got to get out of the business of mortgage insurance, allowing the banks to return to more sustainable levels of mortgage credit growth. And the government needs to properly regulate the banks to ensure that. And that is the long-term plan to return housing prices to more sustainable levels. So I think, you know, this is a good example of being careful that we don't play to people's anti-immigrant fears. I think we have to always look at the evidence before we make policy decisions. And the evidence is that on balance, the single biggest factor in driving housing prices in places like Vancouver and Toronto is not foreign home buyers, but CMHC's mortgage insurance program.
As I talk to you, I look at you and hear you as a progressive. You're inclusive. You have a broad perspective. What is it about the Conservative Party that appeals to you? Because of the major political parties in Canada, it's the one that I think is on, you know, the right side of a progressive movement, and yet here you are. So how does the Conservative Party align with your values?
Well, I'm a fiscal conservative. I believe in much smaller government, much lower income taxes, and much more efficient delivery of public services like healthcare and education. And so I'm a conservative because I believe that. And I believe when conservatives focus on those fiscally conservative economic policies, we win government and Canadians trust us. I think most Canadians are fiscal conservatives. They want to see efficient delivery of government services. They want to see low income taxes and lower taxes. And they don't want us to focus on divisive social issues. That's the kind of party I want to build and why I'm in this leadership race.
That almost sounds like a description of the Liberal Party back in the 1990s under former Prime Minister Jean Chrétien. I think that he would probably say, oh, that was me too. Is that what Canadians want?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Canadians believe in building in political parties that are based on fiscally conservative agenda, but that are inclusive of Canadians of all regions of the country, all backgrounds, all races, all religions, all creeds. And the reason's simple. We as a society have survived against the great elephant to the south of us mm-hmm. because we have stuck together over 150 years. In fact, we've stuck together for hundreds of years. Americans are much more individualistic, much more less oriented to working together. And the reason for that is simple. They can do that. They are a massive economy, a massive country with 300 plus million people. In order for our country to have survived over these centuries, we had to stick together in common cause, and Canadians have always voted for parties that have put forward that view, and I think that's the kind of party I want to build.
We are seeing more and more delineation amongst perspectives in Canadian society. When a group doesn't agree with a public policy decision, they are quick to go out and vocally protest, physically protest. We've just seen the Kinder Morgan decision mm-hmm. from the Prime Minister's office. And that's one that when you have sort of a vocal social media, you would say, wow, okay, that's a bit of a risky decision. How are you going to deal with that kind of environment where the people are saying, ah, but you have to have social license, when mm-hmm. in fact that's not necessarily the way that government is supposed to run?
Mm-hmm. Well, quite simply, I think we need to do two things. First, we need to have a credible policy to reduce emissions. It's one of the reasons why I'm in this leadership race. I'm proposing the BC model. I think British Columbia has actually gotten this issue right over the last 10 years. Gordon Campbell's government in 2008 introduced a revenue-neutral carbon tax where every bit of those revenues was used to reduce personal corporate income taxes. And as a result, BC today has some of the lowest income taxes, has the lowest income taxes in the country, and yet it has the fastest growing economy, while at the same time they've reduced emissions compared to a business as usual track. So I want to take that BC model and export it to the rest of the country. We can learn a great deal from the way British Columbians have dealt with this problem. The second thing we need to do is that we do need to see the construction of new east-west pipelines, and here's why. This is not an issue just for the oil and gas sector in Alberta. This is not just an issue for Western Prairie provinces like Alberta and Saskatchewan. This is a Canadian issue. Mm-hmm. We live in a country. And in a country, citizens have the right to move freely across internal borders, provincial boundaries, without being hindered or impeded. And in a country, provinces which own the resources, especially landlocked provinces like Alberta and Saskatchewan, have the right to get their products to international markets. That is a foundation of what it means to be a country. And so we as Canadians need to understand that provinces like Alberta and Saskatchewan have the right to get their resources to market, just like British Columbians have the right to get their resources to international markets. So to me, this is not just an economic issue, it's more foundationally a Canadian issue about who we are as a country and the ties that bind us together.
Final break, and we'll be right back.
Conversations That Matter is a not-for-profit program made possible thanks to the charitable support of the following and from viewers like you. Please visit conversationsthatmatter.tv and help us to continue to produce this program.
So we're, as a country, in an interesting position. If we see the Trump administration turn its back to China, and yet the North American market is so vital to the Chinese economy, what does that do for us as far as opportunities are concerned? And if you were to be successful and become prime minister, what do you think that you can bring to the equation that would allow us to continue to work freely with the United States under Trump presidency and capitalize on potential opportunities with Asia?
Well, first off, I think we can act as we have in the past as the go-between between the American and Chinese governments. I think Canada has always played a constructive role in acting as a go-between between great superpowers, just like we did in the past. But I also believe that we have an interest in strengthening our ties to Washington. It's clear that our status in Washington has diminished in the last 2 to 3 decades. It's not the result of any one government or any one prime minister. I just think it's a reality that has taken place because of the rapid rise of places like China, Brazil, India, mm-hmm. Russia. And so I think what we need to do is protect our own trade interests. 1 in 5 jobs in this country, 20% of our national economy, is based on selling goods and exports to the United States. And that trade is at risk because of the incoming administration. So we need to strengthen that relationship with Washington. And where American and Canadian interests align in the Far East, we need to work with the Americans to advance our mutual interests in order to get our voice heard in Washington.
So how important then is NAFTA and that we protect that agreement?
It is critical. It is vital. As I said, 1 in 5 jobs in this country relies on exports to the United States. That border has to stay open. And so I believe that the current government in Ottawa should make their foreign policy goal, their number one foreign policy goal, strengthening our ties with Washington to ensure that our voice is heard loud and clear and we protect those jobs.
What's your biggest concern about where we're at nationally right at the moment with the policies of the current government?
Well, I think their economic policies are leading us back to the 70s of high deficits and increasing national debt, stalled job creation, and zero economic growth. And the proof's in the pudding. This government is more than 25% of the way through their mandate. And since they've taken power, the economy has actually flatlined. Job creation has stalled, and economic growth is effectively zero. Economists have said that we'll finish off last year around 1% GDP growth. But if you take into account the fact that our population is growing at about 1%, it's effectively 0% per capita GDP growth. So their policies of big spending, big borrowing aren't working, and we need to get this economy back on track by putting our fiscal house back in order.
What's the most important thing that you want somebody to take away from having watched this conversation about you?
Quite simply, I want to build a much bigger Conservative Party, a party that is inclusive of Canadians from all races, religions, and creeds, that's focused not on divisive social issues, but on a robust economic agenda to create prosperity and jobs for this country.
Well, best of luck. Thank you for
coming in and doing this.
Yep.